Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is episode 120 of the Van Hemlock Podcast.
Hello.
Yep, we're back.
We are.
With a hodgepodge of a topic-y show.
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything to talk about this week, but you've come through with the goods, haven't you?
There's a couple of subjects. Yeah, most of the notes and stuff like that, which I don't want to mention.
Right, okay, yeah. Say no more.
Yeah.
Wonderfully enigmatic.
Yeah.
All right, what you got for the kick us off week?
You came here, actually.
Ah.
Not officially. I might just tell people in the pub afterwards.
Fair enough.
I should stop my people there. Who are going to be there anyway? Right. So, a couple of subjects.
All right.
I thought I'd kick off with a little bit of talking about something related to secondhand games.
Okay. This is sort of a follow-on then from our previous fortnight ago. Something of a discussion, discrepancy. Yeah. Big argument, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, apparently I'm wrong. I was playing K-Zero, which is the zombie game.
Dead Rising
That's the name I was trying desperately to
Dead
remember.
Dead Rising 2, sort of pay-for demo prequel, standalone
which
thing.
At 400 points is quite cheap, but gives a reasonable number of hours chunk of content to play.
Okay, and for us on planet Earth, 400 points is what at the moment?
Fiver, I think.
About fiver? Okay, fair enough. And in dollars?
I don't know. Probably
about
a fiver.
About $8 worth, something like
that? I don't know. It's probably a one-to-one, knowing people.
Fair enough.
And
pocket money grade, though.
Yeah, but the full version of the game will cost full game price. Mm-hmm. So that'll be
$60 or 40 quid.
Yeah,
or
45
whatever.
Quid, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or whatever it gets discounted down to, because in this country there's a massive price war.
Yeah. Standard retail price for a console game, though, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Now, what got me thinking about this is there's not really a gap between the Xbox Live Arcade downloadable games or the PSN downloadable games,
mm-hmm.
and the full price titles. There's a gap in the middle which is filled by second releases of games, the budget releases.
Yeah, but that would have been what I was about to say. Yeah, budget re-release.
Not quite the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is it wrong that there's no middle tier of games which are a disc release still, maybe, but people accept that they're not going to be as good as the AAA Halo Reaches of this world.
Well, I do wonder. I mean, I wonder if people, as it is with just this two-stage tiering thing, have quite the discernment available to look at one and know that it's different from the other. I mean, I remember when we were talking about Dead Rising 2 K-Zero thing there last week, you were quite emphatic and making great pains to sort of, you know, explain that this is a short game, this is an arcade game, this is a 400 point one, don't expect too much from it, you're only going to get 200 achievement points, etc. I mean, do you believe that even as it stands, people are comfortable enough with the two brackets, let alone adding a third in the middle somewhere?
I don't know if they are or not.
Is
I think this they're getting
widely
that way.
Accepted?
But from having talked to many people, a lot of people at the moment prefer the smaller games.
Right.
Because
a smorgasbord approach, I suppose.
Well, who has the time to... Okay, I've just sunk a load more time this weekend into Mass Effect 2, because they released more DLC on that, which added, another 4 hours onto my grand total for the amount of time spent in that game.
Ah.
Which is more than I spent on K-Zero.
It does make you wonder. I suppose... standalone expansions, is that sort of thing? I mean, at the moment we've got this big trend of here's your big game and here's a load more DLC coming down the pipe at regular intervals, allowing you to spend a bit more money on this title over and over.
And spend a bit more time on this title. Mm.
And I suppose the Dead Rising K-Zero thing was quite interesting in that it appeared to be DLC that was entirely detached and divorced from any particular mothership title.
But being separate, it's just there, it's a discrete set of time, especially because it's a Dead Rising game, and so everything is incredibly time based.
Mm-hmm.
You start playing, the clock starts ticking down. When it gets to a certain point, the army turn up, and wherever you are in the plot at that stage or whatever situation you've got yourself into, you get one of several endings.
Ah, right. So a fixed duration as well.
Yeah. Hmm. So we have these massive titles and we have these smaller titles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't expect as much from these smaller titles.
Mm. But then often you get big titles, which ought to be small titles.
Exactly. Take Mafia 2, say.
Yeah.
Good game. Okay. Fun.
Yeah.
Not massive.
No,
but
very, very short by your own
account. Take this week, in a couple of days, Halo Reach is being released.
Mm-hmm.
You may have seen the adverts everywhere.
Yeah.
And that, you know, is going to be a big title that's worth the amount of money it's being sold for. But if you compare it to Mafia and start looking which one of these is going to give me the better value for money, the Halo game's always going to win. It's going to have a better plot, better multiplayer, better everything.
So we're starting to reach for perhaps an objective measuring stick of some sort to be able to gradate these experiences out, these games into different brackets. Yes, this one ought to be 100 Microsoft points and this one ought to be 50 quid.
Yeah.
And so a third way in the middle?
I think that there is a gap which hasn't really been filled, the 20 to 35 quid type band.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, is this perhaps just an extension of computer games are too expensive?
Yes,
it is. Are
you
suggesting that perhaps would a different way of looking at this be that the £40 or $60, whatever, the full price release console title ought to be selling for half of what it does today?
Well, no, I don't think
this merely
I don't think they all should be.
It's all too expensive
but
type of thing.
A lot of the comments we got after the two pieces we wrote on the site have said quite clearly, I can't afford to keep buying the massive big release games. People will buy the odd one,
but
they can't afford to buy one per week.
No, well, so we're suggesting then perhaps that the market itself is saturated. The consumer base cannot take the amount of release that's being thrown at us.
Each person,
is that the problem? Yeah.
Each person rates their worth of anything that they're going to buy. It's how the free-to-play model works.
You determine
works.
Value for yourself on each individual basis.
It's how the free-to-play model works.
Mm-hmm.
You spend the amount on the item stores that you feel the game is worth.
Fair enough,
You don't go out and...
Well, the $25 horse is a good example, isn't it? For some people, that's fine. It's
within their
bracket, and being able to travel fast from level one in an MMO is an important thing.
Yeah.
For others, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. If you want to buy it, by all means, buy it. Do you think it's valuable? If you don't want to buy it, don't buy it. But there are these two different camps there, and both of them have a valid point of view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to games, somebody who's buying the $60 Halo game will think, yes, that's worth it. Some people will think, I will buy the $120 special edition.
We determine our own value,
because that is worth it.
Mm.
Which is why the special edition,
collector's editions with the extra coins and dog tags and cloth maps.
It's a little statuette.
Is it a statuette? Yeah. Is it this time? Right.
Yeah. Make no comment if you see it around next week when you're
saying nothing.
But yeah, people are willing to pay a variable amount based on their worth. Now, the item stores in free-to-play games, which I think we'll also talk about in a bit, it enables you to choose your point in the game, how much you want to pay. But,
and that can vary widely from player to player.
When it comes to buying games, you go into a shop and think, I want to spend 30. This game is worth 30 quid.
Right.
What is your option for buying that game at 30 quid?
The game is priced at 30 quid?
Or? On the shelf, it's a 60... It's a 45 quid game on the new on the shelf.
I'd probably wait for you to buy it and then borrow it.
Okay.
Well, seriously, though, there's a route there, perhaps, where, say, you and I were to walk into a computer game shop, both decide that we like this game, decide it's worth 30 quid, go halves on it.
Yeah. Well, if this game went on multiplayer... Say we were both short of cash and Mirror's Edge, say.
Whatever, yeah.
Or Dead Space, then that would be...
A game where you don't need two discs.
Yeah. But my theory is people walk into the shop, they see a game which they think's worth 30 quid, and the shops have cleverly priced the second-hand version at 30 quid.
So
they are tapping into that market.
Well, it drives the second-hand market quite considerably, which is why this is relevant to our previous topic, yeah. I mean... Exactly. If you've only got 30 quid to spend and you must play a full price game but don't want to pay full price for it, you're going to go look for it second hand. Yeah.
Well, it's if you've got 30 quid to spend either physically or mentally.
Mental 30 quid.
Yeah, because okay. You think, I want to spend 30 quid on a game. Mm. Not, I've got 30 quid to spend on a game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you think, yes.
Well, it's always mental, isn't it? You determine how much you want to spend before you go in there, usually.
So the theory I came up with was the second-hand market is being fueled by the publishers leaving this gap in the pricing structure empty.
I see where you're coming from.
So right, the shops have gone in and filled in it.
There's a demand for reasonably high-quality games at a halfway price point.
And the budget game releases mm-hmm. are sort of this, but they tend to come 6 months, a year later.
And also, those can be quite hit and miss as to what you actually get, what gets a budget re-release.
Yeah.
Typically, it's only the stuff that did absolutely stellarly when it first came out. The classics, finger quotes.
Yes, and so if you see a game you quite like, and you're 2 months afterwards, you think, I would quite like to play that, you're going to buy a second-hand version instead of wait another 6 months for it to come out in time for Christmas.
I don't really buy a lot of console games, to be honest. I've not really gotten into the habit of it, and I don't buy a lot of PC games either. I mean, I generally make do with the MMOs, obviously, and
again,
I do tend to borrow quite a few games from yourself. But if you weren't out there buying them, then I'd probably have to think quite long and hard, and I probably would. I mean, I'm a PC gamer, and I've grown up with this whole... last time I went to the computer game shop...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you tend to go in there, and you look at the console games and stuff. I go straight... I hove straight to the full-price PC shelf.
Yes, which is why I go... That's why I go to the console games first.
Yeah, which is...
So I can't hear you moaning about the shelf space.
I grumble a lot in a quite predictable manner, and then I drift across to the 3 for 15 quid section. And
which I swear are getting
PC,
bigger.
The PC 3 for 15 quid section is far, far bigger than the brand new PC shelf, which suggests that PC gamers, at least, are used to buying in bulk and waiting quite a while before they do so.
They're happy
to wait. They will really scrimp for the money.
Does part of that come from the fact that
they've spent 800 quid on a gaming machine?
Well, no, they have a gaming machine. They can't buy the stuff from the top 10.
So
you buy stuff a couple
of
years down.
Your PC is always out of date.
Yeah,
that's a rule of life. Yeah,
if you're only spending 300 quid on your PC,
That's why the PC new shelf's so bad, and the budget release 3 for 15 shelf's really quite where the market is, where they do the business, is because most people don't have a PC that can run PC games.
I reckon that could be true.
Certainly not new PC games. You know, they're developing in this crazy bizarro developer land where they've all got Ninja 12-core. Eight gigahertz processors or whatever.
A lot of people aren't though. If you look at the number of PC games which are released, quite a lot of them don't aim for that band. The big bracket ones that also have a console release tend to, because they're trying to compete with the console one. And so they're after the high end gamer thing. But all the more casually type games, or even most of the MMOs, don't bother aiming at that market because they know it's smaller than the full market.
Well, I think MMOs are in development so long that cutting edge when they started probably becomes quite manageable by the time it's launched.
Quite possibly, yes.
But then look at APB. That's a bit of a technical hog, I always thought.
Yeah, you just needed a certain graphics card level, after which it worked fine.
Ah, right.
That was my experience with upgrading my graphics card.
But anyway, so yeah, well, that's how it is with the PCs. But with the consoles, which I suppose is what we were talking about here particularly, is we're missing this gap. We're missing a trick. So what are we looking for? We're looking for ascended Xbox arcade games moving up into to make this bracket, or we're looking for people to be a bit more brutally honest about how good their full price game
you can't
is and charging less
you
for
can't
it.
Do the brutally honest thing because your
games
game
cost
costs so
cost.
Much to cost to make. Mm-hmm. And so if you cut down the price, it's a gamble. Will it sell more?
So yet again, we're coming back round to the computer games cost too much to make.
Yeah, I think you need games which don't cost as much
US
to make. But there is a accepted rule or opinion which people say that this game is shorter than the full game. This is not a Halo Reach game.
Are we looking for some kind of some objective cutoff point then? I mean, are we looking for games? Your game must last more than X in order to fetch this kind of price, or is that a bit naive to try and?
I think that would be highly problematic.
So, how do we know which games belong in what bracket and how much you can charge? Because obviously, everyone's going to charge as much as they think they can get away with. That's what business is.
What you would have to do is your publishers would have to buy into the whole scheme in the first place, into the whole idea, and then they would budget their games for that, and then only spend that amount of money on the games
to shift more copies.
I'm sure they could.
We'll charge half as much for this game if we think we can sell more than twice as much by doing it.
Yeah,
and that basically then would be an attractive proposition for them. Would that happen? Would that pick up?
I am pretty convinced that you do this, the second-hand market almost completely disappears overnight, and everyone is happy and PC gaming is no longer dead.
I'm not so sure. I think what you'll find is they'll just reprice the second-hand price point halfway between this new place and the bottom.
So yeah, but that's already
the whole thing will step down.
That's
bit.
Already
you'll end up with full price, the $60 game going on sale for half, a second hand at $30, and the $30 games, well, they'll just go on at $15 second hand.
And
there's
happy.
Always going to be a market for this thing. Oh, it'll just step downward.
Yeah, people always want a cheap copy of Halo, say.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're the people.
The allure of second hand is something more than just we have this money, we want to buy anything. I think it's the thing with second hand is it's we want these specific titles for less money. And doing, would you be able to make a less featured version? I don't know, Assassin's Creed 2 Lite or something. Assassin's Creed 2.
How about
the sort of cut down version? I don't know.
You release a game for £30,
mm-hmm.
which you can then upgrade to the full price by buying down.
Well, by the time you've factored in the DLC, most $60 games are up in the hundreds of dollars.
I dread to think how much I spend on Mass Effect now.
Oh, was it Painkiller? Is it? I don't know. There was one particular example that was.
Oh, Pain. PSN game.
Yeah.
All it is, you're launching a ragdoll physics guy trying to break stuff, and you can spend over $100 on that with the DLC now, I think.
On top of whatever else you paid for it.
Little Big Planet as well.
Yeah.
You can spend a small fortune on the DLC for that.
Little Big Planet's a bit different because they market themselves as a platform, don't they? Which
they're selling, but they release every couple of weeks more paid content.
It's effectively a sort of microtransaction-based free-to-play of thing. I mean, I don't know. Dragon Age, do they do it? They've done a lot. Mass Effect.
Yeah, Mass Effect.
So if you shell out for all the bits, and this is all going to be on top of your top tier bracket of game as well.
This is the DLC. You don't buy DLC for games very often.
I don't know.
See, that is, again, the person making that, I think this is how much I think this game is worth, that I will pay that to get this extra hour or two of content.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just that decision again.
Yeah.
And so DLC
is... So the
is,
opposite of that would be your new proposed thing, which is the...
No, no.
I don't think this game is worth $60. I'll pay $30.
I think if you release, say, Mass Effect down at $30,
mm-hmm.
but you had the option of buying the missing side quests...
Oh, I see.
...to take it up to the full release, you could also buy it at the full release.
I don't see people going for it, because currently people already do buy the big expensive title and then go and buy extra DLC on top and like it and put up with
but
it. Why would you offer a cheaper solution when people are happy with the expensive?
Because you'll sell more of the
perhaps.
Of the product in total, because you'll get the people who just want that and to play through it and don't know if they're going to like it as much, and they've taken a risk. And when they get in there, it's quite easy to sell them the next one if they really like it.
Very hard to say. I mean, I'd love to see some stats. I don't know if it's possible to find any where, you know, Dragon Age Origins, where the campfire.
Yeah,
you got your party camp, notorious party camp there, and there's a guy at the edge of the party camp trying to sell you the DLC mission to go and find the old Grey Warden's keep thing. I'd love to see how people bought that as a direct consequence of let's try and sell people stuff inside the game as part of the game mechanics.
That would be an interesting thing
to see.
I haven't seen any mention
of it. How many people
it?
Just sort of snorted in derision and walked away, and how many people said, yeah, all right, here's another couple of dollars. And went and got it.
I don't know if anyone from BioWare would like to tell us.
Also, was that included in the box with unlock codes? Was that actually day one DLC? Because I mean, I brought it off
you. The
Golem
was.
I brought it off you, and I was missing a few bits.
I think it might have been. I can't remember.
I know
I bought some stuff, and I got a bunch of stuff in it built in. Yeah. I can't remember what the line was. But isn't that the point?
Well, I suppose, yeah. But whether this kind of approach that you're proposing would work does depend on somebody giving it a go and trying it out and seeing what happens with it.
Really. Yeah.
Seeing how popular the idea is.
Something else you probably want to do.
Mm.
If you borrow the game off someone, you're not likely to buy DLC for it, are you?
No, because I feel I'm missing bits of it anyway. I don't know. This is just me again, isn't it? I mean, I am. I don't know how strange or how normal
very,
a gamer
very
I
strange.
Am, but I don't really buy into the whole concept of DLC. To be honest, I just think that the thing you've bought is a standalone and should be a standalone. That's it. I'll use the thing I bought, and then that's that. I don't generally go and buy extras. I mean, I can't remember if I ever have bought any DLC. I suppose I must have gotten a bit here and there. But then,
did you ever buy the Borderlands stuff?
No. No, none of the Borderlands, which I suppose is probably one of the ones I'd be most inclined to do.
Oh, you bought the Gears of War 2?
Yes, I bought the extra maps for multiplayer Gears of War 2. That was peer pressure. That was because you guys were all doing those maps. Yeah. So I thought, well, I better not be the one to let the side down. And that's a good lever for selling this kind of thing.
Oh, it is.
Peer pressure.
All of these multiplayer games for these do it, because you go into the multiplayer rooms where everyone's coming up and it says, this guy does not have this map back.
Yeah. If one participant has the map back, then everyone else needs it. So that's useful, I suppose, a good way of doing it. But no, I mean, precisely, if I'm borrowing a game, what do I want to buy and own DLC that will then not function when I give the game back?
What if the...
I'll end up with DLC that does nothing.
Yeah, what if at that point the game companies make the decision that they're not going to get full price for the game? I'm just thinking how horribly gameable this is.
See, so the idea first then.
And so they will also offer you a slightly cheaper digital copy at that stage.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I could have just gone out and bought it if I wanted to own it.
Yeah, but that's not...
I just want to go and then give it back.
That's not a snap decision.
No,
which is how you get people.
Yeah, perhaps. Or give the game away for free after a while and then charge for DLC on top anyway.
That's an interesting
idea.
Which
is a sort of MMO type solution. Obviously not ideal. They'd still like to get their money for the for full copy of the item. But
bad, like, you put Crackdown out for free and start charging for the...
charge for the extras.
Maybe,
yeah,
Crackdown's a bad example.
The DLC itself. I suppose we're getting towards the Turbine-esque MMO type.
I think we could be at that stage, yeah.
Don't know. But coming back to your original topic then, I don't know. I'm just not sure if I can really see what's in it for them. I mean, I don't see the publishers and developers being particularly happy with only being able to charge mini-game prices for anything they make.
It's not only being able to charge, it's deciding that they're going to go for that market, which is a subtle difference. And I think
what the market will bear in all things mercantile.
And it just strikes me that there's this big gulf of...
If you charge less, you'll only need to charge less if you think you can sell many more of a thing by doing that.
Or if it costs you less to make.
Perhaps, yeah. Which comes back to $100 million price tags for developing games again, I suppose. A common theme here, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, talking of...
But, I mean, on a basic level, would I want to pay less for computer games? Yes, I would.
Yeah, I think everyone would. And
I suppose I'm quite selfish.
The comments
like that.
I got from our little second-hand discussions were people, again and again, saying, I can't afford to keep buying games, or have a life, I have a family, whatever. I can't afford to keep... plunking down,
but I suppose the counterargument $60 I can't afford everything in Sainsbury's, but I have to make choices about food or purchases or from any shop and any genre. I mean, that kind of argument doesn't really hold an awful lot of water, because no one is suggesting you have the right to own all computer games.
No,
that's not, you know, that's, you have to make choices.
That's the horrible argument the pirates use. But the point is, these people are saying, no, I can't afford to pay that, but I could afford to pay that.
So sort of meet halfway kind
of thing. Yeah, I buy the game second-hand because I can't afford to pay the full price. Therefore, if there was a nice range of good
Well, ultimately what will happen is they'll continue to charge vast amounts for very, very many things. $60 for, what, sort of 10, 12 new releases a week? $60 a go, is that reasonable?
Yeah, it's five or so.
Five or
four
six.
Or five on a bad
Still
week.
Still quite a lot, though.
One or two on a good week.
So, yeah. So if you were trying to buy everything that came out, you'd be spending, what, £250 a week, something like that?
Only for the next couple of months, yes.
Wow.
But for the rest of the year,
yeah,
it's
you're lucky,
£100
a good month.
£100 a month.
Yeah, which is, frankly, a bit too much to be paying on consumer entertainment for most people, I'd have thought. So, yeah, we pick and choose based on reviews, based on borrowing and deciding, yes, I like that. And then we go out and buy ones that we like. We don't buy ones we don't like. And because we've only got a small amount of money, the less and less money and higher prices, we can choose less and less of these games to actually go and buy. Which means more and more games don't get bought, which means more and more studios fold and more projects get canned. Thus, it's a self-correcting problem, because ultimately less games will be made.
By
only the people who can do it really well.
I have this horrible fear of the
it
world
does, it
where
does
the
punish...
only games getting being made are the Halos and the Call of Duties of the world.
Contemporary modern squad-based shooter, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a harsh thing, and that does punish new innovation and indie games and all that sort of thing, which I suppose is a bad thing. But it's a solution that it's a situation that will correct itself ultimately.
Oh, it has to correct itself.
If too many people make too many games costing too much money and at too high a price, they're just going to keep going under.
The problem is, everyone's trying to make the next
Avatar.
There's
a finite amount of money to be spent on home entertainment, and that money goes down in times of economic hardship because the essentials have to be bought.
It's like if filmmakers all tried to make Avatar.
They
don't, though. People try and make a whole range of films.
Well, they try and make a profit, ultimately, don't they?
Yeah.
So
most
you can do that two ways. You can make sure many, many, many people watch your film, or you can make sure your film costs a lot less to make.
Yeah, it just seems that, you know, Hollywood worked this out many, many, many years ago, and games haven't really done that in the mainstream.
It does seem like video games are following Hollywood behind by about 10, 20 years or so.
100 years in this case. But yeah, it just seems weird to me that there's a gap and it's not being serviced.
Well, it is being serviced. It's being serviced by the second-hand trade, which you may or may not like the idea of.
Yeah, but that's why it exists.
Mm, yeah.
It doesn't exist for any other reason apart from
I wonder about
people
want
to pay that much
gap,
for the games.
Though. I mean, last time we were in game, I was looking at second-hand titles, and they were only a couple of quid off of full retail prices in many cases.
It depends. If it's a really popular game, like Halo Reach is going to be at full price almost second-hand for
people
ages.
People literally rush out day one, play it to death, bring it back 3 days later.
If they don't like the multiplayer, yeah. Mm. But for stuff like that, then they put it a couple of quid cheaper on the shelf next to the full price one.
Yeah, yeah.
And people go for the second hand one.
Despite it missing unlock codes and what have you.
Yeah. Mm. Or depends on which games they are, if they actually even have unlock codes. Mm. Not everyone does. Talking of this sort of micro purchasing stuff, I got into Lotro.
Ah, here we go.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Lotro free to play is here in the US and not in Europe.
Boo.
Yeah, Codemasters. You know what? I'm going to. I was just poised to go off on a massive Codemasters rant there, but I'm not going to. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and be patient on this one, because in all the time we were playing DDO Europe, would you ever have any real troubles with Codemasters that you could say were Codemasters? Lotro Europe.
No.
DDO Europe was an absolute train wreck.
No, Codemasters have never really been that bad. There have been a couple of delayed patches due to
I'm not going to go ballistic.
But I think that's what's going on now.
You reckon?
I don't think they got the final patch with an awful lot of notice.
Well, there's a certain amount of regionalisation. Don't forget, I mean, Codemasters Lotro Europe has to have a whole load of translation to European, common European languages.
It does, yes.
French, German, etc. So that takes a bit of doing. It's not just a question of shunt it out and there it is. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I might roll up a free-to-play US account just to say hello to people, but I think generally I'd be wanting to play Europe.
I'm not sure if you will.
No?
I discovered two things going to an American server.
Mm.
Well, three things.
Okay.
One, the ping time's not that great.
Yeah, but is Lotro really the super hot lightning reaction game?
I was getting a slightly yellowy, broken connection icon.
I think that's traffic. That's weight of
it could
people
be.
Going
it
in.
It was very busy. There was a queue for me to get in of about 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It said it was going to be 15, but it was about two. Mm-hmm. They must have realised it was me and let me in.
Yeah, press queue.
Yeah. Now, EverQuest 2, free
EverQuest
to play.
EverQuest 2, I'm currently enjoying.
Explain the process of getting in that and starting to play.
You go to the website, you tell them a station account or set one up. That's their sort of overarching account management thing. I used my existing one of those. You push the download button. It downloads about, got 100 meg. In you go and off you go.
Okay.
Character creation screen, away you go. Two slots. Into New Hallis, and you're killing monsters within maybe 5 minutes, something like that.
Right. How do you reckon the Lotro one works?
Identically, because they're not stupid.
How do you reckon the Lotro
wrong
one
answer?
Works?
Go on then. I don't know.
10 gig download.
10? You got. They make you do the whole thing.
Yeah. You've got the option of getting the graphically not as good client, which is smaller.
Yeah, but that's still going to be a gig or two, isn't it?
Yeah. 3 probably, but yeah, 10 gig download.
Oh, no,
had to leave it going overnight.
No.
Complete disaster. That you're not going to get any impulse buying.
You're going to rely on the forbearance of your customers, which is going to drive away a certain amount. Oh, I'll just want a quick look.
I had to leave it
people.
Going overnight.
Yeah, well, then I suppose any MMO that you're planning on seriously playing, I think they should all be doing incremental downloads in this day and age.
Oh, they should
also,
be.
Even if they're proper retail.
Yeah,
this is nothing to do with free to play. This is about. This is about convenience.
It would
and
save
going.
Them bandwidth costs, surely.
Well,
I don't know what their bandwidth costs are.
You could dynamically stream it down to people as you've got the bandwidth available. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, because there's no point giving people more than the starter zone for the first hour.
Yeah.
To be honest,
yeah, brand new player isn't going to need the resources for Angmar in hour or two.
I'm not going to need the Mirkwood stuff quite yet.
No, exactly. That can probably wait a week or two.
Yeah.
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 A bit more ergonomic design there. It seems, I don't know, it seems intuitive, I suppose, but perhaps there's technical
between
reasons.
Between that and the mere process of trying to sign up a character using Internet Explorer. Because it happened to be the default on my PC, which is only ever used for gaming and nothing else.
Mm.
Yeah, that was a bit of a pain. The site didn't quite work.
Had
to move over to Firefox
then,
to make it work. And yes, I know I should have been
doing
it anyway.
They supposed to have been doing a beta for all this, surely?
Apparently they did.
Was that just a preview thing?
Well, they said it was a beta.
Oh, well, stuff that can be fixed, I suppose.
Yeah.
So what's your overall topic here then?
This is just the end of the last topic.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because I really wanted to tell people, European people, they accept PayPal as a payment source.
Oh, okay, good. We like that, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about sorting out credit cards or anything.
Credit cards, debit cards, or PayPal.
Yeah.
That should be the way most MMOs work in this day and age.
And I did really like that quest, which gave me 10 points and told me to spend them on the store to show me how to use the store.
Oh, that was incredible, yeah. Yeah, there is a quest line in the Archit starter area which requires you to go off to the website and spend 10 points that it's given you, 10 turbine points, on buying a thing, at which point you come back and it ticks the quest off, which is great. Talk about breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... and also, I think it's sort of very canny, isn't it? It's showing brand new players where the shop is and how to use it, and they ought to remember that URL. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still, they got to earn their money somewhere, so...
Yeah.
It's not so bad, I guess.
Anyway, moving on to the next topic.
Okay.
Video computer game shows.
Video computer game shows.
I forced you to watch a couple
the
other
night.
Yes. On TV.
Yes, on television. The box without the keyboard.
Yes.
It? Yeah, yeah.
Yes. What are your opinions of those?
I was watching a couple. Can you want to run through them? Because I've forgotten what they
were
called.
I showed you the three which are on in the UK at the moment.
Okay.
Although one of them's not on at the moment.
Bravo one?
Yeah, there's two on Bravo. There's Game Face and the Jinx Files. And on Information.tv and Showcase.tv. It's one of the best conspiracy theory channels you could ever dream of.
Well, yeah, it was just after some guy sat on a space station talking about Templars and ley lines and things.
It's so lovely. Yeah, I love it.
It sort of reminded me of in the film in Wayne's World, the public access television station that they're on.
It looks like a lower budget Wayne's World.
That's great.
Oh, I do love conspiracy theory people. They're
I miss
nuts.
Out on all this. I don't have Sky or anything like that. I've got Freeview, and then, I don't know, is any of this stuff available on Freeview?
Don't know, would they take it?
I don't know what channels there are. I get down to about 30 or 40, and they all start being about shops and
QVC.
Things. Yeah, and I just lose the will to live and
even
dash
ITV,
my brains out of the
room. Even ITV turns into QVC at the right time at night now.
That's obviously where the money is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, so... let's start off with...
Right, well, there was the first one you showed me, which was basically all voiceover. It was playing a lot of footage of computer games and talking. Basically, a little miniature review format.
Yeah.
Series of five-minute reviews of various games. They reviewed... Is it Naughty Bear?
Yeah, they were shorter than 5 minutes. This is Gamers Bite Size,
which
is a new version of the old Gamers one, which was on Sky back in the day, and also is now the guy who does it, Matt Cottle, does Games Weasel, which is on Mevio, and is a video podcast.
Yeah, I didn't like it, to be honest, that one.
It seemed a bit cheap.
Well, obviously.
It seemed cheaper than the podcast, to be honest.
Production values were very low, yes. They had some sort of backing music and visuals and stuff, and playing clips of computer games. I couldn't work out if that was actually stuff they'd recorded or whether that was press.
I don't know.
The demo trail stuff, I don't know.
They were all games I've not checked out the footage for, so I don't know.
Yeah, and then they spent like equal amount of time with game review, phone quiz, game review, phone quiz, game review, and it was basically about half of the show was them keep reading out the
and it's only a 15-minute show.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't really come away from that thinking I'd learned an awful lot about any of these games. I think perhaps the 5-minute format is a bit too short, really, to get any kind of. I mean, I would say that we ramble for an hour when we talk about games, but usually you only get about 6 or 7 titles in, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to perhaps a 15-minute slot on each game, maybe. I don't know, but wasn't so sure about that one. Didn't know if I learnt much about the game. So it seemed to be basically selling it as a sort of review thing. They were doing reviews of games that I wasn't really that interested in the first place, to be honest. See, I wonder about this whole sort of television format, in that you don't get to choose what comes out of the television, I suppose, and to a certain degree you don't get to choose what we talk about on the podcast, except those episodes where we can't think of anything to talk about and we ask Twitter questions and things.
Then it's your own fault, people.
That's all right. There is a certain amount of feedback process here, I suppose. But point being is that if I'm interested in a particular game, I'll go away to an internet and look it all up on there. Probably download a demo, maybe download a trail or watch a little flash video of it or something, learn some system specs, read a few customer reviews on Amazon, that kind of thing. So I'm wondering, in this day and age of the internet, where even the role of the TV show about game reviews is. I mean, I'm just going to sit there numbly watching them pick three games, which I may or may not be interested in, talk for a very short amount of time about it, and then pimp their phone-in quiz, you know?
Yeah. Okay, move on to the next show.
Was it A, the correct answer, B, a stupid answer that sounds like the correct answer, or C, something we just made up while on acid? Phone in.
Move on to the next show, then.
Sorry.
We'll come back to that concept.
All right. So then there was it Game Face?
Yeah.
Was the one with that the lovely young lady there who couldn't stop waving her arms in and out? I don't know.
But Julia Hardy.
Right, okay, fair enough. Yes. So we actually had a person we were looking at that time, which was, I don't know, it helped, I think. It's sort of more in the line of what you'd expect a TV show to be about, rather than just a reel of promotional video.
It does instantly give you the talking point of, is that hair real?
I did ask that very question. Those are going to be extensions, surely. And you go, no, apparently it's real. Oh, well, yeah. Whatever. So, yeah, heckling of a presenter.
If we see her at Eurogame, you can tug her hair to see if it comes off.
Oh, she's a real person. Right, okay. Fair enough. Yes. Sort of standing there with the sort of screen over the shoulder, talking through the various bits and pieces. Now, I like that show a bit better. Partly, yes, a human face to the whole thing, to the whole experience.
And which higher budget.
Higher budget, which did show, yeah. It didn't keep bitch going on and on and on desperately about an 0898 phone-in number.
Sometimes they have a phone-in, but not always.
Fair enough. The one you showed me didn't. Well, if it did, I don't remember, which is good, yeah. Because it wasn't obtrusive.
Then again, quite a lot of shows now have a phone-in.
Well, yeah.
Entire ITV
Listen out for ours
is,
at the end of the show. That was a lot more in-depth. Certainly, the segments were each longer, which helped, I think.
They were about 4.5 minutes long, I think.
I don't know. They felt longer, anyway. There was a lot more review. And to be honest, it was knowledgeable. It felt knowledgeable. They were talking about more esoteric concepts that were more in depth, rather than the previous one where it was basically like he was reading off the back of the box.
He's a knowledgeable gamer.
Perhaps the medium doesn't allow him to express himself correctly, you know, in depth.
I think that's just his style, because his podcast as well is.
I don't know.
It's along the same vein, I'd say.
I call it as I see it.
Yeah.
I like the Game Face one because it did a bit of feature stuff as well. There was strategies for
particular
bits.
Stuff.
And was there more sort of stepping away from specifics features? Topic show, I suppose, in our parlance. There was a bit where she was going on about game cheating and stuff.
There was a two-camera
editorial thing.
Yeah, editorial bit as well.
Which is quite good. I like that kind of thing, obviously.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all we do.
It is.
I think that was better. It seemed a more palatable kind of show. But again, it's I honestly don't really watch a lot of telly in general, let alone specific, you know, seek out gaming shows. I mean, if I have free time, I'll be gaming. I won't be reading about gaming or watching shows about gaming.
Okay, what about the next show?
I don't remember the next show.
The next show was The Jinx Files, which is basically lots and lots of those segments randomly slotted together to make a half-hour show.
I felt that was a bit fast and disconnected.
The segments were the same length.
I suppose, yeah. I don't know. It's just the constant blah, 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 blah of it all. It felt faster. It felt more random, I suppose.
It's because there wasn't the links between, I think.
I think the links help. Yeah. I think the links did help. It made it a bit more viewable. Because none of these shows had anything in the way of a kind of narrative, which I suppose you don't look for in a review show. I mean, I suppose obvious comparisons, what, film 2010, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we'll come to that in a second.
I don't know. It just felt a bit disorienting and in the way that there was no flow through the show, and didn't feel like I was watching a show, and it could have been of an indeterminate length. There was no beginning, middle or end. It was just, here's a thing, here's another thing, here's another thing, here's another thing. We could keep showing you things until our time runs out, and that's pretty much what they did.
Isn't that what that kind of show, no matter what something it's about, whether or not it's the gadget show Watchdog or any one of those segment based informational shows?
I suppose, yeah. I don't watch an awful lot of them, to be honest. It's not something I'd seek out for my own viewing
the
pleasure.
The reason why I bring it up, because there is a reason for all this, is in November, Jinx, the company behind it, which was set up by one of the founders of MTV, is doing a 24-hour TV show station in the UK.
Yeah.
And they've got all of this content, and they're just going to keep playing that again and again.
Oh, blimey. So what, a 24-hour version of Jinx TV, which is full of four-minute segments and just go on forever?
I think that they're aiming at a couple of hours of new content per week.
It's going to be a lot of repeats,
and a lot of repeats, but have you seen TV at the moment?
No, which is part of the problem with this topic, to be honest. I'm helping out as best I can, but I don't watch a lot of telly.
I don't
watch a lot of telly because it's shit,
yeah,
generally, which I suppose might be part of the problem, yeah.
Yeah,
I've been driven away from it all.
You're not really the core market for what those shows are for.
Fair enough.
Now, if we consider a 24-hour channel showing game stuff, they've said they are skewing more casual. They don't want the hardcore gamers all the time, and they made some sort of promises about, you know, after 10 or 11, they'll put some content which will be interesting for the hardcore gamers. But for the rest of the time, it's for the casual people.
Hardcore after 10 or 11.
Yeah.
That sounds so
bad.
But
in a good way.
Bow, bow, trench car. Yeah.
So many jokes.
Oh.
There's something wrong. There's something wrong with the world when the hardcore I want after 10 or 11 is actually game stuff and not... sex.
You, my friend, are an evolutionary cul-de-sac.
I think I am, aren't I? Yeah.
Anyway.
Now, they're obviously skewing it at the more casual gamer. And if we take Gameswipe, which was the most high-profile TV games show we've had on TV the last couple of years, made for BBC4, Charlie Brooker, in the same format as Screenwipe, but definitely skewed at the, I will explain the basics, I'll explain this stuff. I'm not aiming it as the hardcore.
I mean, I'm quite biased because I do enjoy the works of Charlie Brooker, but that Gameswipe show was very different. And this is what I mean by narrative. I mean, basically, it sat down with a topic, which I suppose was to explain the minutiae of intricate gaming the genres.
The foibles as well.
Yeah, well, he spent, was it an hour long, was it? Something like that, 45 minutes, an hour, something like that. And he basically just sat down and went through segment by segment, but explaining what a first-person shooter was, what a real-time strategy game was, what a platformer was. You know, clearly aimed not at people who already knew this stuff, but aimed at, I suppose, people who like watching Newswipe.
Yeah, or Screenwipe.
Yeah, and who don't really understand games and hopefully learn a bit more about it all. But in between each of these sort of little segments, you know, he was talking about some of the greater issues as well. I think he talked about video game violence a fair bit. Which is always, you know, the big bugbear.
A handy go-to one.
Well, exactly. You see people shrieking about that on the news anytime there's any kind of high school shooting. And there's a lot of misinformation. And I suppose in his own way he was seeking to address some of that. So, I mean, I knew all of these topics and knew most of his arguments that he was going on about when he was presenting them. But I still found it quite entertaining and informative. But for me it was good because there was a narrative running through it all. You know, he had a large topic he was explaining bit at a time. He was using game footage to illustrate concepts, but it wasn't a review show. He wasn't trying to sell games to us. You know, it wasn't, here's the five latest cool things I'm going to talk you through. You know, it was an overriding sort of topic that he was using various game stuff to illustrate, which I think worked much better for me, I felt, anyway.
Yeah. I'm not sure I could argue with
and
that.
And he's quite cool as well.
And he's quite cool.
Quite cool snarker. So
now, the one thing that all of it's got in common is they're aiming at the casual gamer.
Yeah, I suppose.
Now, there's a reason for this.
Is that because that's where all the money is?
No. Apparently, you ask most people who play games if they're a gamer, they say no. And yet they may have a Wii or a DS or whatever and be playing games.
Ah, I see. So the term itself is some kind of stigma and also a stereotype of what people who spend 12 hours solid playing a first-person shooter.
Well, I think people just don't consider themselves that. Forget the whole hardcore gamer.
Well, no, I suppose in most people's minds, the hardcore, what we would call a hardcore gamer, is just gamer, isn't it?
And so I think, especially, you know, the Gameswipe tried to do it in a slightly different way, trying to sneak it in under the wires, almost.
It all depends on what your target audience is, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, obviously the Gameswipe thing wasn't for us. We already know all that stuff. It was
for
a more mainstream sort of audience.
It was still for us because he makes a comment at the start saying, because we all like to hear these things said again or something.
Yeah, maybe. There
was enough humour and entertainment in there to make those segments interesting to us, too.
It wasn't a dull factual piece, particularly. But then, having been shown by yourself a number of shows which I suppose are for us, I found myself just not really connecting with that at all.
I don't think they are for us. They are, for one thing, it's the whole review thing. The review thing, I don't think
works. I don't
buy
review magazines. I don't really do a lot of reviewing on, you know, looking for reviews on websites either. I tend to just go with word of mouth or recommendations.
Reviews only work if the presenter's being funny about it.
Well, it's got to be entertaining.
Yeah,
it
needs to be entertaining. If you're just sitting there saying, and this is Mafia 2, and it does this, and it does this, and it does this.
Well, that all then depends on presence and personality and delivery as well. I mean, that Cottle chap, is it? No, that's the Doctor from Battlestar Galactica.
Matt Cottle.
Yeah, all right. He was trying wisecracks as he was going through, but they were delivered in such a sort of soullessly crushing timing and everything, as about literally being read from a pre-prepared script.
You might listen to this, you never know.
I don't know, but I just found myself going wincing, you know, doing the one-liners and wisecracks and stuff. I don't know, it just didn't really.
Whereas the other show had a better line at the humor, I think, just because a lot more experience doing live presenting and stuff gives you a better idea on how to do these things. I assume. I have no experience in any of it.
Fair enough.
But what it got me thinking about, like you said, Film 10, or whatever, Film 11 will be next year.
Mm-hmm.
Mainstream BBC show on at late one night, mm-hmm. where it reviews films.
Okay, so it'll be a segment-based sort of thing.
Yeah, segment-based, you know, film.
Perhaps a feature here or there.
Yeah, feature maybe. The host sits there, happens to be Jonathan Ross until recently, when
Is it Claudia Winkleman got it?
I believe so. I don't know how that's going to work.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, editorial bit maybe, depending. Yeah.
And probably some sort of chart as well at the end, you know. Do they do that?
No.
The sort of opening this week?
They'll just do a coming out this week type thing.
Okay,
but there's
no
chart. No, right. Not really. They don't bother doing that because it's really boring.
Mm.
Now, we have that for films. And other stations have film programs.
Yeah.
Especially the film stations. They tend to have a lot of film programming.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have anything like that for games on a mainstream channel. And I think it's because of this whole gamer thing. We need to find a way of sneaking it under the wire.
Well, it comes back to a much wider perceptual problem, isn't it? That computer games are toys and for children.
Yeah.
Which we obviously dispute.
But, of course.
Red Dead Redemption, that's a child's toy, surely, yes.
Messed up child.
On the one hand, computer games are a childish, juvenile thing that's a waste of time. And on the other hand, you have the necessity to regulate category, age 18 games and, you know, all the other age range categories, and we have, you know, shocking outrage at games going too far with thematic problems and so on, Postal or whatever else. You know, it's like you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Being a gamer, on the one hand, you're perhaps a juvenile waster who spends a lot of time in a basement doing blowing up imaginary things in
playing cowboys and Indians
toys. Yeah, and on the other hand, you're a dangerous psychopath who's probably. Yeah, it just winds me up. I mean, pick one or the other, you know. But then the truth, as we all know, is something more subtle.
Well, the truth is,
most people just do these things instead of watching telly.
Whenever we see the percentages of how many people play games, it's always hideously three quarters or something.
Average game is about 34, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
We're at the point where nearly everyone plays games.
Mm.
And the people that don't are in the minority, for sure.
Big game will outsell big film.
Yeah, and
GTA 4 outdoing whatever in the cinema.
It's going to be if there aren't headlines this week saying Halo Reach is the biggest entertainment launch ever, I will be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got all these people playing games who don't consider themselves gamers, whereas if you've got all these people watching films, they don't consider themselves film buffs if they watch Film 2010.
No.
They consider themselves people who watch films.
An interest in the medium, I suppose. So we need to somehow bridge the gap that perhaps film already has done in somehow direct a lot more grown-up attention and analysis and review to the medium than already exists.
Yes. I don't know how to do this.
How do we do? Yeah, exactly. How do you do this?
I
suppose the shows that you showed me and that sort of thing are a good step in that sort of direction. But
those are
they're missing something because they tend to focus very sharply on the minutiae. You know, they're,
yeah,
it's you know, how many frames per second, how many guns you can have on this level, and so on and so on. And his film 2010 talks more in abstract terms.
Oh, it doesn't mention any
story.
If it mentions a technical thing, it would be saying whether or not 3D worked or
I'm
not
sure
for the film.
I've mentioned this before on a previous topic show, but the our pastime is too absorbed in the technical aspects, the graphics, the sounds, the levels.
We're
the
all
stats.
Wannabe filmmakers.
Yeah, but which an analog of that for film would be somebody being really obsessively fascinated by lenses and camera stock and this that, and there are film buffs like that out there, but they're not the main stream film going public, which we also have in gaming. We have a mainstream game playing public who aren't being catered for by popular review and entertainment shows.
Whenever we try and do a show for them, we always
end up down the nerd alley with all the FPS and the levels and the gun armory and so on.
Whereas if you took, say, Newsnight Review,
that's something else.
Was that what it's called now? They changed.
I think it is.
Or it could be the review show or anything.
Yeah, something like that.
But yeah, that's basically,
that covers a number of different.
They've covered games on it before.
Have they?
Yeah. Mm. And when you get the knowledgeable person, the presenter, and the complete idiot to talk about games, the complete idiot will sit there and deny that games are worthwhile talking about. The presenter will try and mediate, and the knowledgeable guy will say intelligent stuff about it and move on the discussion.
Mm-hmm. But we're still caught in this debate of are games art? We're still at that stage, and until we get beyond there, we're never going to have 2010, but for video games.
It's not our games art, it's our games worthwhile.
I see. Oh, yeah, different thing, yeah.
Now, you do need, I think, in the talking about games, to talk about the how they play.
Well, it's how do they make you feel while they're playing them, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's largely what most film review comes down to, an analysis of the story, the plot. Yes, you'll have some technical discussion, perhaps, of the acting techniques and so on. Does so and so convincingly portray the role?
But only if they're really bad.
Or really good.
You don't say if. Yeah, okay. There'll be a mention, oh, this is an Oscar worthy performance.
Often it will be largely about what the director has done and what the viewer feels and perceives when they're watching this film. But is there even an analogue for that in gaming? Is it worth talking about how a playthrough of Assassin's Creed made me feel?
I think so, yes. And it's definitely worth talking about the plot.
Well, I suppose it is, because that's what we often do on what we're playing.
Because reviews of games rarely mention how good the plot is.
Problem
they say
is,
it has a plot.
Yeah, problem is, though, you can review a film in 2 hours, and to fully encapsulate the experience of Assassin's Creed, for example, you need to play about 40 hours worth.
True.
And so how then do you document that and represent that as a feature or review piece on a show that has to slot into 5 minutes? I mean, it's bad enough trying to basically talk through a film of 2 hours in duration in a 5 minute slot on a review show. Trying to talk about something that's took you 40, 60 hours to do, Final Fantasy, whatever, in the space of 5 minutes. I mean, you're just going to end up with such intense distillation that you're going to get almost nothing worthwhile left at the end of it.
Oh, definitely.
So I wonder if the medium itself is even inherently reviewable in that way.
Well, one of the things that the Jinx stuff does is they'll do stuff like, what gadgets do you have in this game? Not in a overly technical way, but the example I always think of is Just Cause 2. The parachute and grapnel together for motivation and stuff and getting around the place and climbing buildings and just travel is a fantastic gadget combination. It's something new in games you haven't really seen before, and it's fun, and that deserves to be talked about. But jetpacks, for instance, maybe not, because everyone's got a jetpack.
So I suppose if you're going to present short snippets about a particular game, you need to find themes and topics within the game to focus in on.
I think it comes down to, like you've done many times, the nifty.
Mm.
You find what's cool, what's interesting, what's different, and focus on those and talk about those. I think that there's good content there, because like in a film review where you're saying this is the plot, this is the acting, this is what goes on, it sort of holds together this well, you're looking at an implementation but not the details of the implementation.
Well, that was
that
a blog
sense.
Thing, and in a blog post of say 1,000 words, you probably don't have time to fully put into words everything you think about EVE Online, for example.
Exactly.
But
You could discuss the wormhole scanning system, say.
Which I did, and I think, you know, it's something that I found quite fascinating as a sort of subset within that larger thing. Perhaps that might be the way to go with this sort of thing.
Now, see, the other thing is, the stuff on TV is geared towards the more casual people, but still missing the most of the gamers. But there's still a market there for the people who consider themselves to be core gamers, or hardcore gamers, whatever, which, yeah, pretty much everyone who's listening, who want a certain amount of content where people talk, and they call it intelligently and people believe them, hi folks, about games in a manner which they are quite interested in. And that's where the whole podcast thing came out of.
Yeah, specific game podcasts. You'd never get a half-hour show on primetime television about EverQuest 2 or about EVE Online.
No.
But podcast, you do what you like, because you're not tied necessarily.
We still
to
managed to fill that
viewers.
Content. Now,
so something like the Drone Bay or Warp Drive Active builds up a following based on people who are looking for a specific thing and go out and find
there
it.
There is a definite market out there for that, which can never exist on TV or radio. Either.
Which makes me wonder about the whole idea of TV game review shows at all.
Now, what about the game review sites, which have video for each of the game reviews? So when you want to know about a game, you go watch their video review.
That's probably more useful, because it's like BBC One versus the BBC iPlayer, you know? On the one hand, you've got a pre-programmed set of content they're just going to push at you, they have no idea who you are, and they're just going to hope that some of it sticks and that you like some of it. Or you can go to the website, pick out the programs you like, watch them when you like.
I think they call it Calendar TV.
Well, I imagine there's something similar with Sky, isn't there? You build up a...
Yeah, there are certain shows which are on at a certain time which everyone will sit down and watch, like your X Factors.
Yeah.
But for the rest of it, I mean, there's a fascinating series of shows on BBC Four about how to read a church.
Right.
Yeah, a four-part series.
It does sound fascinating.
I love it, because, yeah, it's just the sort of thing I want.
Fair enough.
But I'm watching it on iPlayer, because I don't even know what day of the week it's on.
I don't even know what time of day BBC Four is actually transmitting.
Yeah, I wouldn't sit down and watch this thing. I when I feel like watching it, I watch it.
Well, the point being is that if you're driven enough and have a specific enough interest, you're going to go and find the material you're after in your own fashion, probably using the internet.
Yeah.
In whatever way. So yes, make lots of very, very small programmettes about particular things. Put them in a place where people can come and find the ones that they want, not have to sit through another 26 minutes of stuff they don't care
and
about.
And for the people who want everything, just shove them all sort of an RSS feed.
Yeah,
so they can just watch them all, or choose and pick and choose the ones that are downloaded.
I think the video podcast, I suppose, will supplant television eventually, in the same way that I think podcasting is making a dent on audio radio.
I'm so glad you said that.
Oh, I see. Sorry. Have I played into your nefarious plan or something?
No plan. Nothing
no plan at all.
At all.
Nothing
to see here.
But in general, something I already find myself doing all the time is not going with pre-programmed broadcast media. I listen to iPlayer radio. I watch iPlayer television, Channel 4 and ITV, and have similar systems as well that you can go and I watch a four on demand stuff. I rarely bother sitting down in front of a television anymore, because I have specific things I want to see that aren't on when I want to see them, and that applies as much to video game shows as well, because you're going to go off to wherever, IGN or wherever it is that, you know, File Planet, etc.
I watch very little live because I tend to just hit a series link on my DVR. So Bob just records the whole series of it.
I think they're going to have a bit of trouble with this 24-hour TV show.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
24-hour TV station,
I'm really thinking that, you can get away with the old half-hour show, maybe, and, put it out Saturday lunchtime.
Because it's
going to
have a lot of repeats.
But... yeah, 24-hour TV show. I can't see it
working. Even if you could come up with original content for the entire 24 hours, you then have to...
Without resorting to competitive gaming.
You have to put the schedule on, and that means people have to make sure that they're in and set the video recorder or DVI box or whatever for like 11:30 to catch the particular show they want to watch, or 2 in the morning or whatever.
When odds are they'd be gaming then anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but on the other hand, the sort of market of people who just want to put the telly on and have it on in the background, or just don't care what they're watching, which is surprisingly big.
Yeah.
They're going to still find themselves probably quite baffled by this short loop of repeating games content. I don't know. It just seems unusual. I hope it works. I wish them all success.
I wish them all the best, and I hope it does work. But
because
it
does fulfil a useful function in that it's just promoting gaming into the wider culture as an acceptable thing to be doing as a grown-up.
We need these inroads to come in for people to get used to them being there. And once people are used to them being there...
Then they go off to look for their own entertainment with websites or whatever.
And well, no, once they're used to these things being on TV, they can become a bit more mainstream and... Mm. You know, just the familiarity with, say, having computer games.
Relegated as a wastrel's activity for man children.
Yeah. Because we're at the point where most people are gamers. They just don't admit they're gamers.
Mm.
Yeah. So, okay, if we look at what people have been doing on the internet, there's certain video shows.
Hmm. Now, so you showed me Achievement Hunter.
Yeah, Achievement Hunter, which is the red versus blue people, which I'm surprised you knew about.
I know. I'm hip. I'm with it. I know culture.
Who basically have an informational video show where they just take achievements and they show you how to get them.
That's really good.
And
that
banter over the top.
That serves a very specific purpose. And also, yes, they're entertaining with it. But this is exactly the sort of thing. This is the thing that people are going to go and want to find out and look for. They're going to think, oh, God, how do I do this achievement? Oh, I know. And go to this site, watch a video. And, you know, they're delivering important information because that's the sort of thing that people want to
know. In a visual medium which supports the information.
The visual medium is important because it's very difficult to describe specific gameplay.
One of the things that I actually think we do a pretty bad job at is showing people what we're talking about. Because I can say... Dead Rising 2K Zero.
I try and describe it as best I can, but yeah, it's words.
Who knows what that looks like unless you know what it looks like?
Yeah.
Naughty Bear's a good example.
Mm.
You can sort of imagine in your brain what you think that might look like.
Picture paints 1,000 words, yeah.
Yeah, but there's definitely a market there for people showing video reviews, showing
video
what the game's
game
like.
Videos have a purpose, and it's that kind of thing. The Achievement Hunters, yeah, that sort of thing.
But we can never do this show as video because. Who wants to watch us just sitting opposite each other, gesticulating wildly, sneakily drinking coffee, and then having to cover while the other person drinks coffee and you need to talk a bit longer? Uh-huh. And,
It's a different kind of thing.
But something like G4 TV in America, which actually does have TV, video game stuff on TV, in a very niche, small station, on cable, I believe, that they have a show called Feedback, which is basically this sort of thing, but with more people and a bit more focused.
Oh, what? Well, a podcast recording, but with cameras.
Yeah, and they use cameras on it.
Right.
But the video never really gives anything apart from just the having video there.
You do have to wonder what
extra
the video brings to it, yeah. I mean, it's a TV station, so there has to be something to look at. They can't just have a fruit bowl picture while they talk for half an hour. But
a lot of the video podcasts also put out an audio version.
Mm.
And you have to wonder whether or not the video version really is that important. And I have this nagging feeling in the back of my mind that, yeah, okay, there's all this video, but should that just be audio so people can listen to it in other situations, like in the car?
I think Achievement Hunter is probably about the best way to go and about using video usefully to do the job that just audio couldn't do, radio couldn't do.
But then again, Sunday evening, well, our time, Sunday afternoon, American time, a lot of people sit around and watch Game Breaker.
Right.
Which
you happen to be a minor celebrity on.
I've been on it on occasion.
Yeah.
There is definitely a desire there for people to watch it in video.
Hmm.
Which I don't quite understand because...
Who knows?
I don't like watching it in video because I see me.
Mm.
There is definitely a market there for some of the video. I just don't quite understand...
I'm not convinced. I mean, you had a go. You showed me a couple of shows, forced me to watch them because I generally couldn't be bothered normally. And I didn't really see much there that would change my general lifestyle habits to make time, you know, to sit down and watch that regularly. I generally would just carry on. It doesn't really do anything for me.
Let's take, as a final example of a show, have you ever watched Commode Uncut?
I think I've seen a little bit, a few of his little web snippets.
Yeah, which is basically Mark Mode, who's a film critic.
Yeah, back to films again.
Yeah. Well, I think it is... we're discussing a narrative, and book clubs are boring.
Fair enough.
So it's the only one we can really go to. Mm. And he does a two-camera bit where he just has either a rant or something.
Mm.
And that works. Now,
does it, though? Does it? I mean... I was looking at a couple of them at work on my lunch break with the screen minimised and getting on with some other stuff, and it worked fine. He could just do that on audio. I mean, him staring at a camera and talking at it What does that add? You could just listen.
Do people want to admire
his fine features?
Are people using their, say, Apple TV or Xbox or PS3 to put this content on their big TV?
Maybe.
Is that what the future of TV is? Lots and lots of bits taken from around the internet, aggregated together somehow, and made into a couple of hours of content each week or each night.
It's an idea.
Somebody will get rich off that, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not entirely sure what you decided there.
I've decided that I'm going to carry on just listening to podcasts, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
give up on TV.
Video and TV as tools to promote gaming. I mean, yeah, we're sort of going back to Games Master back in the 80s and whatever.
Yeah. Rumour it's coming back still.
Oh, dear. I don't know. I mean, unless you need to show something visually, I'm not sure why you'd bother. Showing people how to do achievements, that sort of thing, showing people gameplay features that are difficult to describe, yeah. That's useful.
Or just giving an idea under review of showing what picture it all looks is like. For the people.
They all look the same, though. That didn't help.
No. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're all
look, it's another Unreal shooter.
Yeah, World of Brown, arm holding a gun, big monster charging up at crosshair, you know. I mean,
people asking, is this made with the Unreal Engine?
How can you tell? Gears of War, Singularity, what?
I think, is it the Escapist who have little video review ets on their main text review? Then they have a small video thing.
Oh, that's no good, because I auto-block most of that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, that's because you're evil.
I am.
You're stealing their advertising as well.
Death to advertising.
Yeah. So I think in general we're not going to get any video game stuff on TV until we get rid of the term gamer.
Well, I think, yeah, we're still wrapped up in this are games art and are they worthwhile sort of thing that we need to get beyond before we can start looking into the fine detail of review shows and dedicated gaming channels and live coverage of tournaments, all this sort of thing.
We're
not going to get any of that really
on the mainstream
properly.
TV.
Yeah,
it'll always be on these niche little channels.
Until games are accepted as a worthwhile and valid pastime, just like golf or Formula One or whatever.
The only way that'll happen is if we get rid of the term gamer, because people don't consider themselves to be gamers, but they do play games.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, why should it be a ghetto term that is applied as a sort of, you know, you lot over there, you're gamers and I'm not.
Just accept everyone plays games.
Everyone plays games.
If you're playing Minesweeper in your lunch break, you're a gamer.
Solitaire. Yeah. You're a gamer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then why is the term gamer need to exist at all?
It doesn't.
Mm.
Just like there's no filmer.
Film goer.
Film buff.
You film goer, you.
Yeah. Yes. We've got ourselves a reader.
What you reading for?
Yes, anyway, yes. Yep. So I don't think that TV shows about computer games are going to catch on anytime soon.
That 24-hour gaming channel is going to be interesting, but I don't imagine it's going to go much places, to be honest.
No,
unless they try something truly revolutionary.
I don't think they will.
Hmm.
So, any topics you want to cover?
I'm out this week.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to the next What We're Playing there, because I've got lots to talk about with EverQuest 2 free-to-plays and things.
DDO.
DDO, etc. I don't do DDO anymore, remember?
Oh, I hear that you managed to get past that bit you were stuck in.
Yes. Big shout out to Kiasa Cast, episode 61, where they preempted what we're playing on Warhammer. So if you want to find out what happened with the invincible, a word of
invulnerable.
Invulnerable wizard. Go listen to that. Well, it saves me having to cover a lot of ground in the what we're playing next week. Give me a short show next week.
Yeah. They've ruined it for everyone. I don't like them being back.
Yeah.
We have to raise our game.
I know. Competition, isn't it?
Yeah. It's horrible.
Hmm.
So how do you fight that much?
Kiasa.org. You can find all that.
Okay, should we go to the Twitter question?
Let's do that.
I said that Loto had been delayed in Europe.
It has, yeah. We're pleased to announce it's going to be late, came the press release. God, that was a bit weird, wasn't it? That was a masterpiece of doublethink, that.
Yeah.
So, bursting with enthusiasm and bad news, strangely juxtaposed.
So I asked how we should spend our time until it comes out to distract us from the fact they've been delayed.
Right.
Copperbird came in saying Minecraft.
Minecraft?
Yeah.
Right.
I really should play that. It's a little indie game. Just had its PayPal account frozen because it ended up with $700,000 or something in it from the people paying for the game. And Right. PayPal thought that was suspicious.
Too popular, suspicious behaviour. I'll have to have a look.
Arcanor says, did they finish transferring our DDO characters yet?
What, into Lotro?
Don't know. Mom with Thulu said, Lotro has gone free to play in North America. How cool is that? I wish we could have... Oh, this is working, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's technically nothing to see. Yeah, it's going to be a problem because there's nothing stopping us just starting up in the US and saying to hell with Codemasters. And it can be a matter of days. Days late and people not enough patience.
It could be a problem. A lot of people have moved over, I bet.
European Codemasters free-to-play Lotro may be dead in the water already.
Yeah. Harry Hall says, try installing Final Fantasy 14. The patcher will drive you insane. As they say, one pain cancels out another.
Oh, it's beta at the moment, isn't it?
I've been following his tweets on Final Fantasy.
Is that open beta?
It's opener beta.
Right, whatever.
Yeah.
I've seen Massively talking about it a lot, so I guess it must be coming close.
Agent Sandra, who I've never heard of before, so must be
a new follower.
Yay! Watch The Expendables or Scott Pilgrim. Both are excellent.
Ah, or refuge just... in film.
I reckon we're missing some of these. Jaff Soppo says, this isn't the free-to-play you're looking for. Come back several months, we'll get the legal stuff settled.
That's it. I'm quite surprised. I mean, yeah, the... DDO, Codemasters DDO is always a bit of a train wreck, but they're always on the ball with the Codemasters European Lotro, so I'm not quite sure why this is taking so long. We'll have to see.
One might be an automated one, actually. Tepetastic says, not that one, the one before. Tepetastic says, play Mass Effect 2 for the 29th time as an engineer.
That's the worst. That's even worse than Biotics.
Everyone plays Soldier.
Did you see? Yeah, I saw the stats.
Yeah.
That was very interesting.
That was backup topic.
Yeah.
BC Animus says, create working replicas of Daleks and Cybermen, train them to fight Skynet, and send them down the pub.
I think if I had a working replica of a Dalek, all other plans would cease. I'd just want to spend all day trundling around shouting at people. Yeah. It'd be great.
Ackley says, sex and drugs and rock and roll always does it for me.
Fair enough. Good old fallbacks there.
Expevis says, watch The Expendables. Okay. So that thing was actually retweeting him before he said it on the timeline. I love Twitter.
We got bots.
Sorry, Annie, that
us.
Was you in the first place. Zozo says, play World of Tanks. Also, the actual tanks at Bovington Museum, both at the same time for max realism.
Oh, World of Tanks. I haven't had a look at that yet.
Been to Bovington, but not for many, many years.
I've listened to the most excellent Kiasa cast, where they talk extensively about what World of Tanks is like.
Yeah.
Mm.
Hung Donkey Man says, do some Games Workshop gaming. I enjoy listening to it, and it psychs me up to go buy some myself.
Yeah, you got a huge amount of
I can't see
new
the
Warhammer
40k
boxes
stuff
sat around it, haven't you?
Do you want my Bastion of
he's
Bastion?
He's got like a big gun turret e-castle thing there. It's looking rather grey. It needs a bit of work.
Sunk Zero says, archery or clay real pigeon shooting?
Canadian geese.
It's the Canadians.
Wow. That's freaky. When you started talking about that, they started.
Yeah, archery or clay real pigeon shooting always helps me unwind, and they're very cool. I do archery. It's great fun.
Ah, right.
Dr. Tayrag, I hear good things about APB from KiasaCast.
See how many KiasaCast plugs we can get in this section. Uh-huh.
Broken Diet says, go geocaching. My new obsession appeals to my inner geek without a bonus of a bit of exercise. I love geocaching.
Is that with the Tupperware boxes with clues in and things?
Did I ever take you geocaching?
No, I always found an excuse because it sounded a bit dull.
Yeah, it's not. Joe Hart says, watch jovialgamer.com.
Ah.
Again, an example of a show which uses humour to sell their space instead of just dry delivery.
Right.
Okay, fine. I'll stop the shameless self-promotion now. Or will I? Tune in next week to find out. Sean MC74 says, come play on the US servers.
Well, yeah, there you go. Could just swallow your pride and bite the bullet and,
There's a reason why I know how much that download is.
Yeah, I think you've already done that, haven't you?
Yeah. you did actually say you were watching me play earlier.
Mm.
Arbitrary Genius says, record a podcast for ITV Saturday Evening Entertainment and quiz shows.
Oh, one day.
Dot Chaos says, play more free-to-play EQ2 instead. Give SOE no money instead of giving none to Turbine. That'll learn them.
Yeah, well, this is it. This is one of the reasons I'm reasonably patient with European Codemasters, is that I've just started playing EQ2 Extended, so I'm all right doing that for a bit, thanks.
Turbine got a little bit stumped there, didn't they?
Well... Yeah, maybe. I mean, some people just will not play EQ2, and some people only like Lotro, so it'll even out.
Geddon says, Eve, iRacing and rugby.
Eve, yeah.
iRacing, actually, I tried that once. It was quite good. Mm. But rugby, no.
No body contact, thank you.
And Eve, I'm bored of Eve. Ansgar suggests stamp collecting. Or you could play one of the other 15 games currently vying for your time. Just saying.
This is it. I mean, you know, having one title unavailable really isn't a problem anymore because there's so many others and quite a few of them for free now, yeah.
Eric Stowe says, two versus two ladder with me on StarCraft 2. That's us two playing on StarCraft 2.
Right.
No, because I'm bored of StarCraft 2 already.
You're bored of StarCraft 2 already? That was supposed to be the big gaming sensation of the 21st century.
It's all ruse now.
Is it? Oh, StarCraft 2 is old and busted already.
Actually, I quite like ruse. I'll talk about that next
all
week.
All right.
Lotus says, you can do trials of other MMOs you haven't tried yet.
Oh, God, don't make me do the cheap seats again. I'm on holiday, sort of.
And we're running out of games.
There will be more cheap seats coming some month soon, but I'm taking a bit of a break with the jumping around between games at the moment because it drives you mad.
He also suggests, or go to cryo sleep until it goes through to play in EU.
That's
God, that
animation.
Could be a long time.
Yeah. End up with
the future armor.
The future armor scenario, yeah. Wake up and games will have changed beyond recognition.
And the last one is just something else. So, yes, that would be the Twitter question.
Yeah, and it turns out you went with the, actually, sod it, I'm just going to go and roll on the US servers anyway solution, didn't you? So there we go. Proof that Codemasters are losing custom.
I don't know how much I'm going to play, and I'm still going to play on the Codemasters one because that's what my lifetime sub is.
Well, I'd quite like to go back to a server where my 65 Guardian actually is.
But Senyek on, was it Landreval?
Landreval.
The one
yes.
that everyone's on, if anyone wants to have me as a friend.
Apparently Landreval's where all the cool kids hang out.
And so I thought I'd better hang out with some of the Americans now.
Excellent.
Which will be fun.
Right. Only they're all going to be at work while you're playing.
Yeah, and I'll be asleep when they're playing.
So apart from that, there is a reason we tend to prefer European servers. Mostly it's because when we play on those, everyone else on the server is awake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was busy when
stupid
I was on
time zones.
I know, terrible.
Mm. So, what did you learn this week?
I learnt that... what did I learn?
Didn't you learn anything at all?
I'm sure I learned.
That was a wasted week.
Oh, no, I learnt that the Shadow Broker wasn't that much.
Right. And I learnt that model steam engineering is still not interesting.
Time of your dad, eh?
Yes. I'd rather not talk about it, thank you.
That can be the new podcast.
And with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.